This is Talk is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Okay, this week interviewed Wendy Snyder, West Coast organizer for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement for white reparations to the African community. A quick shout out to Lauren Reagan, Civil Liberties Defense Center of Eugene. She connected the Uhuru movement with tremendous lawyers, and this assisted in forming the amazing legal team that won the victory for the Uhuru 3. So this is from uhurusolidarity.org, the website you can go to for more information. As the explosive crisis of the social system deepens under Trump 2.0, with the U.S. government's escalating military expulsions of Mexican indigenous people and threats to annex and occupy Gaza, now is the time for white people to join the real fight back under the leadership of the African Revolution. Stand up in solidarity with African, Palestinian, indigenous, and oppressed peoples of the world. Penny Hess, chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, writes in her article, "It's not just Trump, it's the whole damn system." With the second Trump administration, many white people are raising the specter of fascism, finding themselves in a fearful, demoralized, or paralyzed state. Clearly, we live in a time when struggle and fight back is a necessity. The question is, how do we struggle and to what end? Chairman Amali Yeshitela, founder and leader of the Uhuru movement, has called us to action with this statement. White people want to know how to fight against this system. Come and ask us. Get under the leadership of the Black Revolution, and we will lead you to freedom. Join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, the organization of white people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, who are fighting to end the system of colonialism once and for all. This is the way forward. We call on all white people who want to join the growing movement of anti-colonial solidarity to attend the USM National Convention, White Solidarity with Black Power, on March 15th and 16th, 2025 in St. Louis, Missouri. Register today at uhurusolidarity.org/register. As Chairman Yeshitela teaches, the alarm of fascism is raised when white people begin to fear that we may experience what African and oppressed peoples face every day under the system of colonialism. The reality is that no matter who is in the White House, African people in this country continue to catch hell through police terror, mass incarceration, gentrification, and other conditions of colonial oppression. The USM National Convention is our opportunity to join the struggle against colonialism, the blood-sucking system of war and destruction built on the enslavement of African people and genocide of the indigenous people for the benefit of the white population. Colonialism is not a thing of the past. From North St. Louis to occupied Palestine, colonized people are leading the fight. The anti-colonial struggle for national liberation and self-determination is the only true basis for the end of imperialist wars and genocide. This is the future for all of humanity. In the 1950s and 60s, when the cry of fascism was raised during the Red Scare, McCarthy era, it was African freedom fighters like Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, and Rosa Parks who fought back to keep the democratic space open. The same is true today. Don't despair. Organize. White people can be a part of building a positive future for all of humanity. Join the fight back under the leadership of the African working class, who have always been the leaders and drivers of progressive change. Join the growing number of activists, students, volunteers, supporters, and people of all ages and backgrounds who are coming to St. Louis, Missouri for the USM Convention. Hear directly from the leadership of the African Revolution, Chairman Amali Yeshitela, and learn how you can take action and fight back for justice, peace, and reparations. Join the movement for reparations as a revolutionary act of solidarity. A new world is being born. We can join the rest of humanity through solidarity with African, indigenous, Palestinian, colonized, and oppressed peoples who are fighting for a future where nobody lives at another's expense. All right, so coming up, Wendy Snyder on the reparations movement. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
My name is Wendy Snyder. I'm the West Coast organizer for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And I've been involved working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party for about 33 years. And I live in Oakland, California. By trade, I work in the educational system as a counselor. And I love reparations. And I love just being involved in the fight back right now. So
All right, well, so let's start with basics. What does Uhuru mean? Because that's important to the movement.
yes.
You start all your meetings with the word Uhuru.
We do, yes. So Uhuru means freedom in Swahili, and it actually was a slogan that the Mau Mau used in the anti-colonial struggle in Kenya against British colonialism and imperialism. And the Uhuru Solidarity Movement was created by the African People's Socialist Party, which was founded in 1972. Really, as an extension of the Black Revolution of the 60s, its stated aim was to complete the Black Revolution of the 60s when leaders had been imprisoned, assassinated, people like Fred Hampton, of course, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, the whole attack through the FBI on the Black Panther Party. And so the African People's Socialist Party actually came together with three different organizations to form a party. And that was the JOMO, which was the Junta of Militant Organizations that Omali Yeshitela, he was then known as Joe Waller. Also the Black Workers' Rights and the Black Reading Group. There were three different groups that came together and formed the party and also put out the newspaper that's still in existence today, the Burning Spear newspaper. And 4 years later was when they held, the African People's Socialist Party held a conference to build the African People's Solidarity Committee. Because what was happening is they were getting random checks, random bouts of support from white people, different progressives around the country, but it was intermittent, it wasn't reliable, and it was also, it would be later that the whole question of reparations, Omali Yeshitela had determined to make it a household word, which it is today. And so the question of reparations was really on the table around building a committee, a solidarity committee that would be accountable to the organization. So white people organized under the leadership of the Black Revolution. And what we have today is really an outgrowth of that in terms of a mass, more of a mass organization that people can join. Anyone can join. You don't have to be an active member. But our points of unity are that we work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party. We organize in the white community for reparations to African people. So it's like a people's movement for reparations, not a committee to talk about it. You know, I love the name of your program, Talk is Cheap, because I definitely agree with that. And then our third point of unity is that we stand in solidarity with self-determination for African people and for all people. And yeah, that's a little bit about USM
So
or Uhuru Solidarity.
the show is primarily about people that are doing something about it rather than just complaining or even informing. They're actually doing something about it. And you guys are doing something about it. What is the Uhuru movement provides a path to fight back against colonialism, and it's mainly
Yes.
colonialism that is the problem. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And what, you know, what if we're zooming, you know, back in time to, you know, the 60s and the 70s, party was founded in 1972. A lot of these questions weren't really resolved in terms of what to do about the white people and in terms of the Black Liberation Movement's question about how to involve that white support. And also, I just want to say that going back to the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which actually Chairman Omali Yeshitela was a part of SNCC, you know, that was founded by Stokely Carmichael, later became known as Kwame Ture. And that organization was a really pivotal organization that I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about, but just to say that, you know, in the name it's Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, but Really, they were a fight back organization that, believed just like we believe in tactical nonviolence.
That was the
But
seed of the Vietnam, the anti-Vietnam movement, war movement.
yeah, they took a position. They also took a position for, in unity with the Palestinian people. And, especially that, taking a position against the Vietnam War and the U.S. violence against Vietnam, as well as a position in unity with the Palestinian people, many of much of the white liberal support was withdrawn at that point. And also, and I wasn't there, so I've learned the history, and people can fill in, some of the holes I have in my understanding. But one thing I do know is that Kwame Ture called for white people to go back into the belly of the beast to they kicked the white people out of SNCC, because what they saw was that white people were coming into SNCC, and because of colonialism and colonial education, the fact that we come, as white people come with all these skills, many of us, and come into organization and would kind of usurp the roles that Black working class was like trying to build up power. And so the famous call from Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, was for white people to organize our people in the belly of the beast and get them to support the Black Revolution. Well, African People Solidarity Committee and Uhuru Solidarity Movement is really that's its historical legacy, really. The African People's Socialist Party was successful in creating a strong solidarity organization accountable to it, and really going, with the approach that white people, all white people, we sit on a pedestal of stolen land and labor, and that it is in our interest to unite with reparations, to really be a part of progress for the future, and that it's always been the Black Liberation Movement, in this country has been historically, that pushed the question of democracy and civil rights, social justice, from the McCarthy era, but even before that, obviously. And so the resistance of African people to chattel slavery, to convict leasing, to Jim Crow, that we can follow that inspiration and stand, just stand behind the Black Revolution, and actually what O'Malley Oshiatella has said, we can become Black Power in white face, so turning the tables there. And
But the
yeah.
difference, the distinction though, is the power comes from the bottom up and localized organization or organizing rather than a top-down empire-based solutions is what the white people were advocating, more of a top-down something done by the central government. And
Exactly. Yeah.
you're and you, the Shatila and them were more advocate of, and this is what you're doing now, a bottom-up, localized, decentralized
Yeah, I would say
movement.
decentralized in the way, yeah, that you're saying, in terms of like we're against the welfare state. And so that's what some people think of, the Uhuru movement is like, what? Are you on the right wing? No, we're not. We're for African self-determination, because I didn't realize growing up as a white, liberal Northern California, is that the whole child welfare system, all the systems are in place to destroy the Black family. You just have to study a tiny bit and you realize these entities are not, they may be providing some basic needs, but they're in the way, and they're in the way of self-determination. And so, yes, the
Because they're
Black
making them
people.
dependent on that
Exactly.
situation, and that and what's feeding that situation is colonialism.
Absolutely. And what one thing we also like to say, the party says, and I repeat because it's so true, is that white people, we've lived off the welfare, of the state, getting all kinds of incentives to buy homes, to Homestead Act, to steal land, to pick up the gun against indigenous people, to to call the cops, to protect our community because of the bad, all this stuff that we sort of have taken for granted. People looking for a home in a nice neighborhood. Well, what does that mean when you break it down? It really means, the political economy that we're living in, that's colonial capitalism. And so the Black Power Blueprint is really brilliantly addressing that right now in full force in St. Louis, Missouri. And that's where they've been able to reverse gentrification with over 50 properties and taking on, but it's going to be a fight because we have to defend the organization. And at every turn, the just like the government attacked the Black Panther Party programs, the government has and is attacking the independent programs of the Black Power Blueprint.
So you want to go over what are those, what are you doing in St. Louis?
Yeah, so there, so the African People's Socialist Party went to Ferguson, Missouri, after the murder of Mike Brown. There was the subsequent acquittal of the cops in 2015, and so the party made several trips out to St. Louis and that area. And then I think it was the next year or two, they basically set up shop and started to take over these abandoned buildings. And one thing, like, I've been to St. Louis 3 times now, and it's the north side that is deeply impoverished, that has, direct roots in, slavery and colonial capitalism. And so the African People's Education and Defense Fund, which is like the nonprofit part of the Uhuru movement, started taking over these buildings that were literally crumbling to the ground. And there were like the city has a policy where they let things rot. They actually own all this property that they're just sitting on. Nothing's happening with it. And so the Uhuru movement went in there and started rebuilding and set up, like, started really making connections with the community. There was the Gary Brooks, well, it still exists today, but Gary Brooks just passed away in November. But he was just a Black man in the community who had a garden and started, so they started making these connections with builders and demolition people and started raising funds. And I think, believe the Uhuru House Community Center was the first building that was opened. But now there's an outdoor space, there's a basketball court, there's a building for the future health, Women's Health Center, there's the African Independence Workforce residence. So it's in place for people coming out of prison to be able to live somewhere. The Uhuru Bakery Cafe is now, we just had a recent victory with that because the city was trying to block the permit for a bakery cafe in the middle of a food desert. We were able to push and win that because the way in which the Ona Yeshitela, in particular, she is the president of the African People's Education and Defense Fund, has made alliances with Black businesses, and they've actually created a neighborhood organization that is helping the community thrive rather than just sort of like letting things rot,
Right, you
So
couldn't wait for the central government to come down and rescue you. You can't.
exactly. But they still have to deal with these entities to get, things like permits to open a bakery. So, but yes, it's been a very, it's called the College Hill neighborhood. And there's no grocery store and no restaurant with any boundaries of that neighborhood. There will be. And what has happened since, like, even the basketball court, is there's been like a ceasefire amongst, the different entities who were fighting each other for turf. There's community business people who've said that the Uhuru movement has done more to transform the neighborhood in 5 years than the city has ever done. And so it's very, very moving to see that. And it just like the sky's no limit, you know, like it, as much as we can understand that the resources, like $1 will go so much further than, like, you know, say $1 to, you know, some other entity where you have, you know, people not serious about actually changing lives. And I know I've left some things out, but I'll just stop there
Well,
because.
so this is what's known as what you're describing is what's known as what you guys are calling the Black Power movement,
Yeah,
the
Black Power
Black Power
Blueprint.
blueprint, and this is a blueprint for other cities to
Yes.
do. Are other cities have other cities taken this on now, and is there success in other cities, or you're urging other cities to take this on?
I think I would say that they're urging other cities to take this on. I think right, like currently there's an Uhuru House in East Oakland, California. There's also an Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida. I know that there's some different like economic development projects in different parts of the US as well as in Africa. So it definitely is a blueprint. I think that we're looking at like the convention that is coming up for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement will launch this thing called the Reparations Legacy Project. Because I think the only thing that's holding it back is that independent money, you know? And the more we can grow, not only just the grassroots people who are going to donate and, you know, donate their time and resources, but also going back to going after the big, you know, moneyed sector that want something really positive to do with their money. So we're launching that. It's called the Reparations Legacy Project. And I know that there are some details that I still don't know about because they're meeting around it, but they're really wanting to go on a bigger scale of like, let's go into other cities and develop these types of programs that you know, really, really change the fundamentally the neighborhood, because they're not only creating things that are like owned by the movement, it's really about like partnering with Black businesses that already exist and creating economic hubs, you know. So, but it's, you know, so yeah, so to answer your question, I would say it's something that is in development.
And so this can be used also worldwide, though, in Palestine and Venezuela and Afghanistan and
Yes.
even Russia and Ukraine from the bottom up.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's get into, if you don't mind. So I just went through Amalia Chatella's video on the Trump presidency that he did a few months ago, and he's talking about the Atlanticists. And sort of what we've already touched on, and like for instance, an example I just thought of was, Norway and a lot of the socialist countries that we have right now that are socialist, they are they make their money off of oil.
Yep.
So this is an again an example of colonialism of the top down rather than the bottom up, that you're still supporting resource extraction
Yep.
everywhere. And this is what the Atlant what he's describing as the Atlanticists are about: resource extraction, and their bait and they're funding your any social welfare is tied to a resource extraction. So this is what you're trying to get away from.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point.
And NATO and the UN are exa according to him, are examples of this. They're basically, and the WTO, they basically facilitate colonialism. Because I come from the, I've studied globalization and lived through the whole globalization thing and watched this go on. So can you tell me anything? Can you elaborate on the whole philosophy?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things that Chairman Amalia Chatella has been talking about for a number of years now. I was just looking at something that was on Black Agenda Report that was addressing that, you know, that was 2018 talking about the Atlanticist bloc coming undone, and Chairman Amal Yeshitela talking about every white man for himself, which is interesting because one of the things that kind of shifted my understanding first coming into this organization is that, what we call World War II, World War I and World War II were really imperialist wars, right? And so post-World War II, like you said, well, actually, I don't know about the WTO when that was founded, but NATO was, the IMF, the World Bank, right around that time, the United Nations. And these were entities that were organized to contain Soviet Russia, which is what they called it at the time, and make it difficult for Germany to dominate the world. And that also, most importantly, these were peaceful mechanisms that would really enable the white world to control the rest of the planet, in a gentlemanly fashion, right? Under the rubric of like World Bank, United Nations, International Monetary Fund. NATO, of course, is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And so the Atlanticist bloc has, NATO as this military arm. And so, Trump posed a challenge to that, in his last administration. But what we see is that, like, the collapse of Soviet Union happened some years ago, and that removed like the logic behind it, right? Like containing Soviet Russia. We see like escalations of anti-colonial struggles. And so that unity of the Atlanticists is definitely been challenged. And I didn't realize that during Nixon's time, right? That was also at play. But
And so this is why you're seeing the rise of an authoritarian like Trump, that it's a result of our colonialism. And the point I'm getting at, and the point that you guys are saying, is that if you want to stop this stuff, that reparations are the keystone in their regime. Is reparations for Black people, and ultimately, I mean, we need to send reparations to Syria and Palestine and all that too. We've caused these problems, and then as a result of that, these authoritarian regimes rise up because of the res as a result of our foreign economic policy.
Absolutely, and I like the way you framed that because really, when we say unity through reparations, we're talking about the demand, the revolutionary demand of the African People's Socialist Party for African people, not just Black people in the US, but African people worldwide, because Africa is like the cornerstone of this whole, imperialist US-led world economy. And like you said, Syria is owed reparations, right? Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine. I mean, every entity that suffered under un, has suffered under this US-led, white-led colonialism is due reparations, and that turns the table on everything, like even the US aid being cut. It's like, well, come on, like you said, like that's not self-determination, and that's part of that welfare state as well, keeping people dependent.
Well, and so our productivity, though, too, that those dollars that are spent on reparations, I'm going to see that it's going to become a cycle that builds up an upward spiral rather than a downward spiral that we've been getting from supply side economics and their whole top down situation. So what I'm
Yeah,
getting at
I
is that,
think.
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, so this is why white people should be in favor of reparations, because it's eventually for their own self-interest, at the risk of sounding capitalist or whatever, that it's for their own self-interest.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the same way I is around land back. It's like if we want to be a part of a future that's viable for this planet, then we need to think of reparations not as like this very limited, you know, thing, but something that fundamentally challenges, you know, the social system that we're living in and gets rid of colonialism. So, yeah. I like how you think on the
Well,
big
and
scale.
so you're directly addressing the distribution of wealth. You're, you know, too, that the wealth has been
Absolutely.
concentrated into the hands of the few. We need that wealth distributed. And
Yeah,
this is a
and
method for doing that.
yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to say about the question of reparations, Chairman Amalia Shetela put together this book called Reparations Now, The Verdict Is In, and it's actually let's see, it's from 2023. It's actually a transcription of the World Tribunal that they held in New York City, the first tribunal on reparations in 1982. And they had a mass organization at the time called the African National Reparations Organization. And this was attended by people like Leonard Jeffries, the African professor, Afeni Shakur, Tupac Shakur's mother, talking about the attack on the Black Panther Party, and also just really delved into the counterinsurgency war against the Black Power movement. Because, you know, people don't realize that the Black Panther Party was an internationalist, you know. Organization, you know, it started off like 10-point program, you know, Oakland, California, and it expanded, you know, to really, you know, they were meeting, you know, they were going to China, Vietnam, Huey P. Newton, you know, and revolution was the main trend in the entire world. And so, I think, yeah, so back to what you're saying, it fundamentally challenges, you know, we're not just talking about the 1%. We're really talking about I think I looked at the math of white people on the planet, you know, the 16%, you know, that white people sit on a pedestal of stolen wealth, and that it's, you know, again, it's in our interest to be a part of the rest of the peoples on the planet who are struggling and living off of $1 or $2 a day. So
Well, so and I'll get back to that, but just the point that you're talking about too is that it's interesting, ironic that the FBI, you are against the FBI, and yet there are liberals that are in favor of the FBI because of their response to Trump.
isn't that interesting?
So there's a whole thing, and I can't believe people are coming out in favor of the FBI.
Absolutely. I know. And when you look into the history of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover made his career off of his attack on Marcus Garvey, you know, and Marcus Garvey was left out of many history books. I didn't learn about him until I joined the Hoover movement, but you know, he built an organization that was Africa for Africans, those at home and those abroad. And they were building do for self programs, self-determination programs. They were internationalists. They published The Negro World that went all around the planet. The FBI finally got Garvey on some fabricated mail fraud charge, you know, and he was exiled. But that was J. Edgar Hoover, you know.
But they're
And
still doing it. You just won your trial after a
yes,
great amount of.
they're still doing it. Yeah. And the trial was, so for your listeners, just to rewind, and I know that you probably talked about it on your show before, but in July of 2022, that's when the FBI raided seven homes and offices of the Uhuru movement, military style raid, guns drawn, loudspeaker in front of Chairman Amalia Shetela and his wife Ona Zenay's home, 5 in the morning, it's dark. They order them out of the house. There's, you know, just a whole military encampment in front of his home, in St. Louis, North St. Louis. And they stole, they kept them outside for hours while they stole boxes and boxes of archives, everybody's computer. They raided the Uhuru Solidarity Center on the south side of St. Louis. It's in the white community. They held Chair Jeff C. Neville of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement for hours, along with his wife, who's also a leader in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, Amanda. And they also tricked Akile Anai, who is a leader in the African People's Socialist Party, living in St. Petersburg, Florida. They said her car had been broken into, lured her out of her house, and then held her while they raided the Uhuru house in St. Petersburg. And I could go on and on, but essentially they took, I think it was 10 months to even, there were four unindicted co-conspirators, and that's what they called it.
And
But
all this basically because you're asking for reparations from Russia, that you're trying to encourage world reparations for blacks.
That is a really good point, because Chairman O'Malley Chitela, with other party members, went to Moscow for a conference with the anti-globalization movement of Russia 2 times in 2015. And they tried. I was at the trial of the Uhuru Three. So let's fast forward that we had three of the Uhuru Three, which includes Chairman O'Malley Chitela, Chairwoman Penny Hess of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and Jesse Neville, the chair of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Those are the Uhuru Three. They were eventually charged. Well, first, they were facing charges of being agents of Russia, number one, and two, being conspiring to be agents of Russia. So the trial was September 3rd through the 12th, I believe. And because of the counteroffensive that the African People's Socialist Party waged over 2 years, getting everybody who cares about free speech, who they can find, on board with the Hands Off Uhuru campaign, we packed the courthouse. We had people there from all different sectors, some very unusual, people interviewed Chairman O'Malley Chitela along the way towards the trial. But
Politics made strange bedfellows,
yes,
the
yes,
allies. Yeah.
yes.
Well, because it was about free speech.
It was about free speech, so it
Yeah.
doesn't matter, right? You could be American patriot, and there are some people who, like Scott Ritter, he's self-proclaimed American patriot, but he, was the one blowing the whistle on the weapons of mass destruction, so-called, in Iraq. And so he came to the trial. We had people like who are veterans of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, all kinds of different African liberation groups, as well as the National Lawyers Guild. And I did want to shout out, I was asked to shout out somebody who is in your neck of the woods, and it's Lauren Regan. Is that how you
Right,
say it?
in Eugene,
Yeah.
yeah.
In
Right.
Eugene, of the Civil Liberties Defense Center, who conducted some legal support, did some legal support. But in the end, the jury was confused by all the minutiae of, like, maybe they were with the FSB, which is like the secret, what they call the secret police now. All these minutiae of communications between the Uhuru Three and the anti-globalization movement of Russia, so that what ended up, it ended up being a split verdict, in that they were charged. They were acquitted of being agents of Russia. So the jury saw through that, saw that, like Chairman said, we don't work for Russia, we work for Black people. And number two, they got charged with being conspiring to be Russian agents. So then December 16th was the sentencing hearing. Leading up to that, we got almost 2,000 letters to the judge, character letters. For the Uhuru Three, each of the Uhuru Three. And, all this time, it's clear that we've been waging a campaign around free, anti-colonial free speech. And I'll just read the first line of this from the Burning Spear. Not one day, not one dime. The Uhuru Three won, the US government lost. No fine, not one day in prison, no fine in the Uhuru 3 sentencing victory. No one's going to prison. No one's going to be fined, stated U.S. District Court Judge William Young on Monday, December 16th. So
So we the point
that
is
was the highlight.
we don't support the FBI.
No, we do not.
And the
No,
FBI is
they
not.
caused this mess. They lied on the, they lied.
Because we're running
They,
out of time here, so do you want to
yeah,
go into the
okay.
next?
So,
What can people do to support the Uhuru movement then,
yes.
and black reparations?
Yeah, so please just go to uhurusolidarity.org. So Uhuru solidarity.org. Find out, look at our points of unity, register for our convention. You can attend online. It's going to be March 15th and 16th. It's called White, the theme is White Solidarity with Black Power. Join the growing movement, Solidarity with African, Indigenous, Palestinian, and Oppressed Peoples. This is going to be a 2-day conference. Where we'll have workshops on how to talk to white people about reparations. We'll have a tour of the Black Power Blueprint. We'll talk about the incredible victory of the Uhuru 3, the free speech trial of the century, and also just how the African liberation struggle connects with other people's struggles for freedom. Yeah.
All right, yeah, thank you very much for your time. And
Thank
this is
you.
awesome work. This gives people hope.
The big hit was in 1970, I think. It goes something like this. And fairies tell them where is sanity. Tax the rich, feed the poor, tell there are no rich no more. I'm reading, nation leading, still no free economy. Life is funny, sky is sunny, bees make honey.
was a party remover. I'll give you a dose, but it can never go close to the rage. Builds up inside of me. Fist in the air in the land of hypocrisy. Movements come and movements go. Leaders think movements cease when the head gets blown. Cause all these folks, they got bullets in their head. The prophets are police, the judges, the feds. Then what's it worth? Keep your people calm. They know they would have to change when he spoke out of Vietnam. Turn the power to the have-nots, and they take the shot.
Countries and profit from their reconstruction in order to survive.
And that's not a system that changes every 4 years. It's a system that we have to break down generation after generation after generation after generation. Great!